Now I am here with Bill George. He's the founder, owner of Nimbus Films. He is a historian. He is a journalist. He is a filmmaker, and he's going to make history fun. Is that, Bill, is that what you promised us today?
Absolutely.
You're not going to put us to sleep with history.
No eyes glaze over. This is the real thing, man.
All right. Well, let's find out a little bit about you. What's this organization or this set of projects that you've been working on all these years?
Well, I was a journalist for many years. I started out in Iowa, where I did a history of Iowa in the Civil War, and that got reaction. I worked at Channel 3 for a while, then ended up working for Ford Motor Company. Long story, worked for Governor Pete Wilson, economic development, did a lot of different things. And I've always loved history, but I had never been in a career in it. I should have been, but my dad said, what do you want to do, teach history and be a high school teacher? So,
and that was not a good thing, apparently.
It was in those days, it was a low-paying job. Anyway, I just always wanted to do it. So when I got some time and money, my kids graduated from college, and I thought, you know, I'm just going to go for this. And people kind of thought I was crazy. No one wants a documentary film on California history. There's no history here anyway. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And so I just thought, I read a book, and it was about the Transcontinental Railroad. And the Transcontinental Railroad began in Sacramento. It did not begin in the East. It began in Sacramento with a group of entrepreneurs who put all their money up. And they built it. Now, there's a railroad's one thing. Now, there's no other railroads really in the West at the time. So they go out and they hire the best engineer they can from New York City or New York State, a guy called Theodore Judah, who should be among the biggest names in history, largely forgotten. They bring him out here and they say, you know, look, we need a railroad. They build a railroad in from Sacramento to Folsom, and they wanted to connect all the gold rush area. So we're the gold rush.
So the gold rush, we discovered gold in 1848,
exactly.
Right? Sutter's Mill.
At Sutter's Mill.
Sutter's Mill. So that happens, and then how long later did the railroad begin?
Well, they began it in 54.
Okay.
The same year, by the way, they began to build the state capitol. So they bring him out, Judah, and he is a great engineer. And an engineer at the time was not just a guy who laid out the tracks. He also figured out sources of revenue. How would they make money? Shipping ag products, tourism, passenger travel, all of these things. So he presented them with a plan, the guys that we call today the Big Four. And he'd first gone, by the way, to San Francisco. And he tried to convince investors in San Francisco to invest in this plan, and they turned him down. So he came to Sacramento. They welcomed him. They listened to his pitch, and they signed up for it. And for many years afterwards, you read in the newspapers in San Francisco that this was a horrible idea, terrible. The Big Four were terrible people. Sacramento was a terrible place. Those same SOBs that had stole the state capitol and put it here, now they went and stole the railroad. So it was an amazing story
of
entrepreneurship.
So what were they moving? They're moving the gold, I guess, initially.
Right.
But ultimately, the railroad changed a lot of stuff for Sacramento.
Well, it changed it for the world.
Yeah.
The world. So when the gold rush hits, they have to come here for thousands of miles. You're coming overland. People are dying of cholera, or you're coming around the Cape of Horn. There's shipwrecks. It's extremely perilous. The type of people that we got in Sacramento in those days were incredible. They were all entrepreneurial. They were all go-getters. You had to be to get up and get
the toughness
get
to
out
get
of
over,
here.
Oh, get yeah. over the Sierras and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Right, yeah.
So they get here, and now they're up. You know, Sacramento becomes really a hub of the gold rush. And in order to get the gold, they have teamster companies, oxen and big wagons and everything. And they're like, you know, this is tough. So they put that first railroad in to get the gold, to get it out and ship it back east. And then this dream begins, because if you're here, you can't get back home. You know, it's very tough, as I said, to get back. So they're like, we need a railroad. The whole country wanted the railroad. The other big, huge thing that's going on is the approach of the Civil War. The North and the South, they're splitting up.
That's like in the 1865 range.
Well, the war is in 1862. But before that, both sides are, this is why it takes California kind of so long to become a state. We don't become a state till 1850. But, you know, they're splitting sectionally between South and North. The railroad, actually Jefferson Davis becomes the head of the South, the Confederacy. He wants to put, he's an army engineer, he wants to put it down the southern route to what is today Los Angeles. Well, the northerners weren't going to go for that. So they were dedicated to put it in. Leland Stanford is a Republican. is a governor of California, one of the early governors. He becomes good friends with a former railroad lawyer named Abraham Lincoln. When Lincoln's elected, Stanford's able to use his contacts with Lincoln to work out a scheme to get it put into Sacramento. Of course, this just drives San Francisco nuts. They hate us. They're like, this is crazy. So they take all this abuse, all this criticism. They say, you're not going to be able to build that railroad over the Sierra Nevada. You are nuts. You're going to lose your fortunes in the canyons of the mountains. But these four guys who had been prosperous merchants, you know, not super rich, but well off. They could have just sat there with their money, not invested it, but they risked everything to do it and put that railroad over the mountains. And with Judah's, the engineer's genius, they are able to do it. They put it in ahead of schedule, under budget. They did get federal loans. They repaid all of them with almost double the interest that they had gotten on the bonds that they had secured to pay for the railroad. Tremendous success story.
Interesting. So I grew up in Roseville, which we always considered a railroad town. When I was a kid, a high percentage of the workers worked at Southern Pacific. And so thinking about this, why is this history not told more?
Well, it is told. I guess we just haven't told it in the right way. And what frustrates me a little bit is that if you Google top 10 historic cities for tourism in the country, we're nowhere to be seen. And we should be. We're the home of the Pony Express, the first transcontinental telegraph, the first transcontinental railroad, the gold rush. I mean, it's unbelievable. There was more history here than almost Donner Summit. We call it the most historic square mile in California. And then, of course, Sutter's Fort. Sutter's Fort has been equated with some of the great buildings throughout history, the Colosseum, buildings like that, by historians who say that was the focus of the Western migration. John Sutter, who got out there, established really this empire. He thought it was going to be an agricultural empire. And then, of course, the gold rush came and kind of changed everything. But without him and his vision, and he wanted to get people here to farm and agriculture, we wouldn't have that either. So it's just unbelievable. So I don't know why. I have some suspects in mind, but I'm not going to pursue those here. But I'm working really hard. That's my dream, is to really elevate Sacramento's history and bring in tourists here, bring in people. I think one of the issues is that we're a whole region. In order to understand our region, you have to understand Auburn. You have to understand where Coloma, where the gold was found. You have to understand Grass Valley, where the huge mines were, the huge dams were built, the huge things that were done. So all of that ties in together.
So thinking about this, so entrepreneurs founded the Sacramento region's growth. They were, you know, which is not surprising, because I think most of the great things that happen in our world happen because of entrepreneurship, of people taking risk, making sacrifices, trying to figure out a way to build something better for society and for their families. But in comes the government. So we end up planting the government here, right? The state capital ends up being here. How much do you think, talk to me about how the state government coexisted with this entrepreneurial ruggedness, and then somehow the government feels like it really kept growing.
Well, I think you're kind of psychic, because that's one of the areas that I've often, and I actually kind of worked in a lobby firm for a while, and somebody said to me, you know, there's a disconnect between the state government and the state business of politics, if you will, and the city. Those folks don't seem to get involved in the city a lot, even though when Sacramento got the capital, we gave them the land for that because we thought it'd be a great economic boom. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know how you investigate that. Did that kill the entrepreneurship in this town or not? I know a lot of people who think that. I'm not ready to pronounce that, but that could be another good film.
Well, it's interesting. So I have this fascination that if the entrepreneurial leadership of our town and the people that can help drive economic growth could all band together, that we could bring back that entrepreneurial spirit. And really, despite the fact that we're a government town, entrepreneurship can thrive. It thrives. We talked about Stanford earlier in the Palo Alto area, in the Silicon Valley. It's thriving there. And I have this fascination that it could actually happen here.
Well, I would think so too. I mean, clearly we have the climate. We have all the resources that are here. Agriculture. I mean, when's the last time you really heard someone talk about the agriculture of this region being important to the history? I did another film on the history of California agriculture. It's just fascinating. And now we seem to be trying to drive agriculture out of the state with every means that we have. It's ridiculous. And so all of these things are so important to our region, and we could go in so many ways. And tourism, I really think we could be way up there. You know, we finally have, I think, I remember when I worked covering the legislature, Willie Brown had a great line back in the 80s. He said, Sacramento is a restaurant-free zone. Well, that's changed now. We do have young people coming in. Thank God for that.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, so I think there's a lot of hope and potential. So I think you're right, if we could work together. But I think the nature of politics is, you know, these folks don't live here. They come here 3-4 days a week and they go home. Right. They're here to represent their district and get their district going, not our district. But
exactly.
But the Capitol has been an amazing resource, I think, for the area.
Well, let's talk about what winning looks like. You talked about your vision a little bit. What you know, you had the success. You obviously had to take some risk in starting this this filmmaking career, this storytelling career on your own. Talk to us about that journey a little bit, and then what success look like at the end of the day.
Success to me just looks like teaching, informing people, sharing my love of history with them. I'm not really in this to make money. I don't really care. I mean, I want to present it the way I see it. I think one of the big advantages I have is that I didn't major in history. I did go out into the world. I work for large corporations. I work for small companies, help start up some companies. And I understand, you know, what the risk, how business people, the risk they take, and how every day. I heard a professor one time say, you know, my dad was a businessman, and he'd come home at night frustrated, you know, this didn't work right, the shipping didn't work, you know, all the things that go wrong. So the historians do not understand what you go through in running a business. Imagine building a railroad. They had to import all the steel rails around Cape Horn from the east. There was no manufacturing in California at that time. All the parts had to be ordered. They sent one of the big four went back to New York, and that's where he would go. And he would, you know, all the competition we talked about. Yeah, there's a lot of competition. There's other railroads. They wanted that steel. The Civil War is going on. There's demand for the steel and iron for that, for the gunpowder to blast through the mountains. So he's back there cutting deals all the time. And so you have to understand the pressure that they had. And they still pulled it out, as I said, ahead of time, paid back all the bond money to the government. So it's an incredible thing. But I think I bring that perspective to it, which is often lacking when you read history, and they think that all the business guys are, you know, evil and all this. And, you know, it's not just Stanford with his donations. If you read the old newspapers, you can read the papers from back in the day. They're preserved. And they'll say something like, a cholera epidemic broke out. We need to subscribe and build a hospital. Who do you think was ponying up the money? It was the business community people. Every time after time, you can read it. The Odd Fellows, which I think was a social club, they built the first hospital out here. So these are the guys that stepped up and made sure that not only did they prosper, but our whole community prospered.
It's interesting. Do you think the entrepreneurs of the 1850s and beyond are tougher than the entrepreneurs of today?
You know, I think people are people. I really do. I think as a historian, I look at it. You look over the time, you know, the world supply of villains is relatively constant. And so I think that, you know, if you look at it that way, no, I wouldn't say that. But the circumstances certainly made it that if you weren't tough, you're going to die, basically. You had to really fight for life. And it was through the, you know, great. You'll see, again, you'll read where a cholera epidemic breaks out. There was a group of doctors in Sacramento that half of them died saving the cholera victims. So it's just that you had to kind of do it or else, you know, they weren't going to make it. So I'm confident in the future. I think I hate this. Oh, you know, back in the day, we all ate nails. You know, no, people are tough. People are resilient. And I'm very confident of the future.
So you've been around successful people. You've studied successful people. Just thinking about our audience out there who, beyond wanting to know the history, we want to take something away that maybe we can apply today in our lives. Any thoughts, any words of wisdom in thinking about, you know, these, how history might, we might be able to use your history to help us learn for how we might use it today?
Well, I like some of the things Kwame said earlier, you know. I mean, he was really spot on about how to approach it. I think that one thing is with successful entrepreneurs, if they really want to get to that, you know, Bill Gates, Zuckerberg level, they don't stop with success. It would have been easy for the big four to sit back and say, hey, I'm set for life, man. I'm in Sacramento. I can buy property. I can, you know, that was appreciating. Everybody was a speculator. They could see that. But they didn't. They took it and they went on. And there's many other people from the time who did the same thing with like building irrigation systems and agricultural products and everything. So we all have our risk tolerance, you know. I'm not sure I would double down on it, but if you really want to do it that. And the one thing I've learned in my life is I never wanted to make a single bet on my company that if I lost it would cost me the company. So that's my own advice. Other people would go way beyond me, but that was my risk tolerance right there.
I love it. I appreciate you coming on the show, Bill, sharing some stories. I look forward to learning more from you. Before we let you go, it sounds like you have one more story that we need to tell about. What do you have in your hand there?
So this is a slice of the original Transcontinental Railroad. This is from near Cisco, California, which is right up the road as you drive up 80. They had what they call the barrel pit there. It was a big staging area. So we went in there a couple years ago and found some big, huge slices of rail. I brought it out. And
he's holding what he's holding in his hand for you radio listeners is a piece of steel. It looks like it probably weighs about a pound or two.
Almost a pound.
And this is from the original Transcontinental Railroad out of Sacramento. Interesting. So, okay, go ahead. Tell us a little bit more about this and why you brought it on today.
Well, it's just I've cut them into like just be little things for your desk. Paperweights.
Is that a gift?
It's a gift. It's a legal gift.
Oh, it's like got a little stand on it.
I don't expect any. A little stand.
Well, but this is one thing we love about doing this show is occasionally, very rare occasions, we'll get a nice gift. Bill, thank you for sharing your story. That was a gift in and of itself, but I appreciate the piece of history to keep on my desk as well.
Thank you.